is E.R. DuPont. Mr. Kircher.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Doug Kircher, here with my partner, Julie Burke. We represent Jim Bearden. The district court's order was erroneous for three reasons. First, the DuPont's pension plan doesn't specifically define the word retirement, and accordingly, under the law of construction, the word retirement is presumed to have its ordinary meaning. The pension plan uses retirement under its ordinary meaning throughout the plan.
So just a week later, you retire, you're retired after just a week of work. You work for a business and, oh, I turned 65, I'm ready to retire. I qualify. That's the ordinary meaning.
Yes, Your Honor. That's
my problem with this case. I mean, I look at the pension and retirement plan and it specifies different forms of retirement, and the annual terms of the stock options specifically reference the pension and retirement plan. And it just seems to me, without regard to the Dineen Declaration, your client did not retire within the meaning of the pension and retirement plan.
Your Honor, so we disagree with that. The Dineen Declaration, let's say it this way, the Corman case holds that the DuPont is not entitled to come up with a different meaning if that meaning is contrary to the express terms of the pension plan. The pension plan, again, uses retirement consistently throughout using its ordinary meaning.
Well, he didn't retire within the meaning of the pension and retirement plan. I mean, I don't see. Did he? I mean, he didn't qualify in any of those categories of retirement that are laid out there, right?
Yes, Your Honor. So he qualifies. The Dineen Declaration itself in paragraph 14 describes that he qualified for an other retirement, which is described in their SPD. And so, again, here, DuPont is trying to cherry pick its favorite definition of retirement to help it prevail in this case, where it's apparently, at least in the pension, it's paying.
I thought your argument was that this is just the ordinary meaning of retirement. It doesn't have anything to do with the pension and retirement plan.
Yes, Your Honor. The pension and retirement plan governs. We concede that. The point we're making is that because the pension and retirement plan doesn't specifically, so Section 9 of the pension and retirement plan has definitions, and not in those definitions is the word retirement. So under the rules of construction, the word retirement is presumed to have its ordinary meaning. If DuPont was going to come up with an unusual meaning like it has here in this case, which their proposed meaning is retirement plus 15 years of service. And if DuPont was going to come up with that kind of unusual meaning, it was incumbent upon DuPont.
Did your client qualify for normal retirement under 4A on pages 2 and 3?
No, Your Honor. He did not
qualify for early retirement under B?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
Incapability retirement on page 4 and C?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
And optional retirement in D on page 5 doesn't qualify that either, right?
No, he qualified for what they call, what Ms. Dineen calls and what their SPD.
Those are the only ones that I see listed. Those are the only categories of retirement I see listed in the plan.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the stock options specifically reference the plan.
They do. They reference the plan, but not Section 4 of the plan. And that's our point right here, is that DuPont wants to cherry pick its favorite definition out of Section 4, whereas, and through that is with disregard the use of the word retirement throughout the rest of the plan.
Well, so just on that exact point, so Judge Pryor's reading from those lists, and you're saying there's some cherry picking going on from that document. Let's focus on that document.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where in that document is there a different meaning of retirement?
So throughout the plan,
the same word, one. I just want to talk about this one and not go to the summary. I just want to stick with this, just to make sure I'm. I just want to get your point.
So sections one. Let me just sections 1, 3, 4, 7, and 9 all use the word retirement under its ordinary meaning, consistent with the rules of construction, which require it to be used under its ordinary
meaning. And at that point, you mean just 65, or do you just mean leaving?
The Black's Law definition that we've proposed is termination of one's own employment, especially upon reaching a certain age.
They have to use a general term of retirement in the rest of the document, because when you get to 4, there are multiple different kinds of retirement, all of which you say your client doesn't qualify for.
That's right, Your Honor.
And they're using the term retirement generally because there are different kinds, but your client doesn't qualify under any of them.
But, Your Honor, that's the point, is that in the award term, the stock option award term, it uses the term retirement.
Mm-hmm. But then,
retirement as defined by Section 4.
References the pension and retirement plan.
It does. And that's what we're referencing as well, the entirety of the pension plan, not the cherry-picked Section 4.
Just so I understand, are you making the point that outside of Section 4, the word retirement appears? Is that the point you're making?
Yes.
And you say whenever you see that word, we don't worry about what it's qualified by. We go to Black's Law Dictionary.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the definition of Black's Law Dictionary is voluntarily leaving a company at
termination of one's own employment upon reaching a certain age.
And is the certain age always 65, or just because otherwise you're just voluntarily leaving the company if it's not always 65? Are you saying always 65 or not always 65?
Your Honor, I don't think this case we were required to reach that decision. The pension plan.
You're required to give a coherent definition. If you're not pinning the age down, then as you see it, the word retirement means just leaving the company. The certain age being the day that your age, the day you leave. Am I getting it?
That's right, Your Honor.
It could be 62, 55.
It could.
26.
It could. Absolutely, Your Honor. Because that's what the word retirement. That's what the Black's Law definition of the word retirement.
It worked at DuPont. That's a great deal.
Not a chance.
I want to ask you about Ms. Dineen's declaration. It looked like to me you and your client objected to that, and somehow maybe in the handoff of the case from one judge to another, that just dropped through the cracks and never got ruled on. Is that right?
That's right. What the court's referring to is the sole argument that DuPont makes is that it had the authority to cherry pick, to diverge from the plain meaning and use its cherry picked meaning.
That's not the way I read their argument. As I understand their argument, retirement has a meaning, and it's a meaning that's defined by the pension and retirement plan, which lays out 4 different forms of retirement, all of which you admit your client doesn't satisfy.
So, again,
there's no cherry picking at all, as I understand their argument. They're just saying that's how you read it.
That's the backward looking interpretation, and they're coming up with a definition that's unique to retirement. They're saying it's not just retirement, it's retirement plus 15 years
of
service. They're
saying you have to read the whole text.
That's right. That's what we're saying. And when you look at sections 1, 3, 7, and 9, and you look at
want to read 4.
No, I'm happy to read 4, because 4 in the very preamble talks about, it treats retirement separately. If you look at the second sentence of paragraph 4, it says an employee who retires and who meets the eligibility requirements specified below. So right there in paragraph 4, it says retirement is separate and distinct from these requirements.
I get this entirely. In order to defeat that, you have to have a competing definition of retirement that's coherent.
Fair.
And age 26 retirement, forgive me, is not coherent.
Your Honor, to Judge Pryor's point, Section 3 of the plan talks about age 65 as being the retirement age. So we're very comfortable with saying it would be consistent with that Section 3 of the pension plan. You'd make it age 65 and apply the Black's Law.
Yeah, but the optional retirement has a 50 age requirement and a 45 age retirement.
And so those are, again, defining the pension benefits that the employee would be eligible for. This is a separate exercise.
I'm looking at four. It says an employee who is eligible for retirement may retire at any time. Any employee who retires and who meets the eligibility requirements specified in paragraphs A through D. You wanted to read that second sentence without reference to the first sentence. And then when you go through the A, B, C, and D, what do they all have? They say normal retirement, A, number one. Eligibility. B, early retirement. Number one, eligibility. There, an employee who is eligible for retirement may retire. These spell out what the eligibility requirements are. You don't retire unless you satisfy those eligibility requirements. That's the way I read the first and second sentences, the whole text.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Our interpretation is that the award terms use the word just retirement, not retirement as Section 4. And so our interpretation is
you may retire if you meet these eligibility requirements, which your client doesn't.
That's correct, Your Honor. Again, what we think their definition of retirement, which cherry picks Section 4, is inconsistent and would kind of lead to absurd results if you apply their definition of retirement throughout the document. So, for example, in Section 3, it says the company reserves the right to require an employee to accept retirement at age 65 where permitted by law. So if you plug in their definition into that sentence, which would be retirement plus 15 years, it would be an absurd result that they can force their more senior employees to retire, but in your example, the employee who's just come on board couldn't retire. I do want to point out that
I don't think that's absurd.
But, that we did object in the Dineen declaration to Dineen's testimony, and the court did not rule in the transfer. The court did not rule on that.
I just don't know that it matters. I don't think we have to resolve this based on that declaration because it seems to me we can just read the terms.
Your Honor, we do think it can be controlled by the terms, but again, we think the award itself talks about retirement, not retirement and Section 4. So the entire plan has to be read in context and the ordinary meaning given to the word retirement. Since they don't specify in Section 9, the definition section, they don't give a definition for retirement.
Let's get to the final question.
The plan, the equity plan, says that these interpretation decisions will be made by the compensation committee, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that didn't happen here as far as the record reflects.
That's exactly right.
It's not up to us to interpret the terms of the plan in my view of the world because the plan says the compensation committee's got to do it.
That's right, Your Honor. There is no evidence.
But you have admitted he doesn't qualify under any of those four definitions.
So, Your Honor, he qualifies. He does not qualify
under those. Under four, A, B, C, D, right? He doesn't qualify in any of them, right?
He qualifies for the usage of the word retirement in 1, 3, okay. 7, and 9.
Yeah, I know. That's what you rest your case on.
So I just want to make sure I understand. You also have an argument about the summary helping you in terms of the interpretation. Am I right about that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is your position that the summary has this provision that says you're eligible for some plan, some benefits after 5 years?
That's exactly right.
So I guess is that your preferred way of thinking about it? That I realize that there's language elsewhere that says if there's a conflict between the plan and the summary, the plan. I got that. Although
right.
If this were an ERISA case, I was a little puzzled why you didn't bring it under ERISA because isn't that a pretty good argument? in ERISA that if the summary contradicts the plan, isn't the company usually in trouble?
So the summary under the Hartley case that we've cited, the summary contradicting the plan is evidence of bad faith.
But isn't that true in ERISA? I thought you had to be in ERISA land for that. I thought that was all statutory. Am I misremembering it?
So, Your Honor, no, we've proceeded under a breach of contract theory.
I know. That's why I'm wondering why. I don't understand it.
So, Your Honor, I think at the time we filed the suit, I don't think we were aware of the summary, but this is all information that came out in discovery. But the key point that you're making is right on. In paragraph 14 of the Dineen Declaration, she points out that he does qualify for other retirement under the summary.
Mr. Kircher, you know, I've allowed you to go over. You've got three minutes saved for rebuttal, Mr. Barnes.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Justin Barnes on behalf of DuPont. And I'd like to get right to the point. DuPont certainly doesn't believe that it is cherry-picking anything and would point to the plan itself. And as the court noted, Section 4, Mr. Bearden does not meet any of those definitions. Now, I think it's important to read the sections 1
and
3.
It's opposed to definitions. I mean, it's just eligibility requirements. To retire, you have to meet eligibility requirements, and there are four different kinds, right?
That's correct,
Your Honor. He doesn't satisfy any of them.
That's correct, Your Honor. And Mr. Bearden did receive a deferred pension benefit under Section 5 of the plan, but if you look at Section 5, and that's the other retirement that we're talking about, if you look at Section 5, it describes the deferred pension benefit, and it says that An employee shall acquire a non-forfeitable right to a deferred pension if his employment within the affiliated group is terminated on or after this date for any reason other than retirement.
Right.
And so Mr. Bearden received this pension benefit because he retired for a reason other than retirement. So it's certainly our position that irrespective of the Dineen Declaration, just looking at the plain language of the plan terms, the award terms, and the incorporated pension plan, not the SPD, not the summary plan description, but the pension plan, DuPont wins because Mr. Bearden did not meet any of the eligibility requirements.
Can I just make sure I'm getting one kind of linguistic point? So your key thing on the option is it says termination of employment, right, and that the key language is due to retirement, and then it's got that paren, as defined in the applicable pension or retirement plan or plan company policy. I just want to make sure I'm getting which document is which or whether it's referring to one document. That's what I wasn't quite sure of. So I assume applicable pension is definitely Section 4, right, because that's how it's labeled.
That's correct.
How about the other ORs? Is that meaningful language? Is it superfluous, or does it refer to different documents that are also consistent with your interpretation?
And so going to Judge Martin's question to my colleague, Mr. Kircher, the Compensation Committee actually did make an interpretation that section refers to Section 4.
But not in Mr. Bearden's case.
No, they did not make a specific decision with respect to Mr. Bearden's stock options because it was an interpretation that was made then was applied equally to everyone.
And you say he wasn't entitled to have them decide the meaning of these terms. Is that your position? Just so I understand.
He was not entitled, because this was not an ERISA benefit, he did not have any internal sort of formal appeal rights for purposes of this. Now, he did escalate it, and a number of people looked into the expiration of his
But my point is, as I read this plan, he is entitled to a decision from the Compensation Committee about all questions of interpretation and application of the plan, and he didn't get that, did he? I mean,
yes,
in his personal case.
Well, he did not receive a communication directly from the Compensation Committee,
and the Compensation Committee didn't consider it for his particular case.
Did not consider his specific case. What happened was the Compensation Committee made their interpretation. Then that was the policy that was applied to everyone.
And is that the way it normally works? I mean, is that the way DuPont usually does this? You make one decision and then it's precedent. You don't have any more requests of the committee to consider?
There are no exceptions made. In this particular situation with this interpretation, exceptions are not made because you can't make an exception for one employee.
I'm trying to figure out something slightly differently. is the way this case proceeded the way it normally proceeds. In other words, you have an interpretive debate 5 years ago about how to work this. The committees ask the question, they give the answer, and then in the next 5 years, five other people are covered by it, and they don't get new decision-making. I'm just assuming that's how it works, but I don't know.
That is correct.
Okay.
And that's precisely what Ms. Dineen was describing in her declaration, was that the DuPont, through its compensation committee, has made this interpretation and applied it consistently after the interpretation
was made. She just did a survey of what she understood them to do, although she had never been a member of it.
She had not, but she had years of experience with the DuPont pension plan. And I think based on the context and the evidence in the case, I would agree that irrespective of her declaration, DuPont wins. But yep. I do want to address...
I expected
this it. Because this is a breach of contract case, and no one disputes what the relevant contract documents are, right?
Correct.
You got two documents that are controlling here. One is the stock option document that references then the retirement plan. Everyone's in agreement. Those are the governing documents. So if we just read them de novo, which we would have to do in a breach of contract case, and he admits that his client didn't meet the eligibility requirements for any form of retirement under Section 4, end of the story. That's your argument.
Correct. But if the court finds there is any question that remains unanswered, it's answered in the Dineen Declaration, which is uncontroverted.
But his argument is that it's unambiguous. The ordinary meaning of the term retirement is broader than just what, in his terms, is the cherry-picked definition of Section 4. So from his perspective, too, it's a de novo interpretation, and the Dineen Declaration doesn't matter either.
Correct.
Right? So either way, that's the way we look at the case, it seems to me.
Correct.
Am I missing something?
And certainly from the outset of the case, DuPont has argued the plain language of the documents govern, and that's it, end of story.
So I think when you were answering my question I asked earlier, you were assuming I knew more than I did. Thank you. But now I'm telling you to correct that. Maybe what your shorthand answer was that this is exactly what the Dineen affidavit declaration answers, and I just have forgotten it or didn't get it. I just want to go back to the parenthetical. I just want to make sure I know what you're saying. As defined in the applicable pension or retirement plan or plan company policy, are you saying that according to the company and this one committee, Section 4 represents all three in this case? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. So what... because I would have said applicable pension. I mean, it's very funny the way it's written. I would have said the applicable pension or retirement plan was the document that has Section 4. And then I would have said plan company policy would have been maybe rulings or interpretations or maybe plan summaries. That gets us into a little – but that's a very funny interpretation to say those three things mean – are one thing.
I understand your question. I think they're both referring to the pension plan, number one. I think that they both, there's not some
other... We could ask the compensation committee.
But don't you think policy must mean something else? Like policy suggests maybe the summary or decisions of the compensation committee. That also could work.
I think a policy interpreting the pension plan correct would fall under that. Either way, they're referring to the pension plan, not something else.
I hear all the time, either way we win. It doesn't help me, though, when I'm trying to make sense of it. I got it. Thank you.
And I do want to address the Dineen Declaration with my remaining time, because I do think that if there's any question about the meaning of the documents, all you need to do is look at the Dineen Declaration, and it answers those questions. And it's admissible because she had sufficient personal knowledge to testify to those things. Correct, she was not on the compensation committee, but she had been involved in, and as other witnesses testified to, she was the pension expert within DuPont. And she herself testified in her declaration about her years of experience and testified that she had the requisite personal knowledge. DuPont and its supplemental...
She is not empowered to make a decision on behalf of the compensation committee.
She is not. She is not, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have personal knowledge of their decisions.
Well, but she wasn't there when they did it.
No, but she doesn't have to be there when they did it.
She Otherwise, can just take a survey, and that substitutes for a decision of the compensation committee.
Otherwise, taken to the extreme, no employee could ever testify about company policies within their sphere of responsibility.
So if the committee makes a decision about this kind of retirement question, any kind of question that's within its jurisdiction, is she the company employee who's responsible for implementing what they've decided?
That is correct.
And so she has to know what their decisions are on a day-to-day basis, without regard to this particular client, just every day in how she does her business, she has to know what their decisions are to do her job, right?
That's correct. And that's precisely why DuPont said in its supplemental interrogatory responses that she was consulted about Mr. Bearden's stock options because she was the pension expert and knew the definitions of the terms within the pension plan.
Whether she was present in the room when they then made a determination or not, to do her job, she had to know what their decision was.
She had to have personal knowledge of what their decision was.
And that's always the case for her to do her job.
That's correct, Your Honor. So from our perspective, as I mentioned, DuPont certainly believes that either way, whether you consider the Dineen Declaration or not, DuPont wins because the plain language and the documents themselves demonstrate that Mr. Bearden did not qualify for retirement. And unless there are any other questions, I want to respect the court's time. I'll see the rest of my time.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Barnes. Mr. Kircher, I apologize.
No problem. Thank you, Your Honor.
You know, I'm curious, why not depose her? That would just cleaned all this up.
So, Your Honor, we didn't depose her because her declaration was not made on personal knowledge, right? She can't do what Judge Martin talks about, a survey. She can't just do a survey of things that she doesn't have personal
knowledge. He thought it was a gift. He thought it was a gift to just let it lie in wait and then point out that it's useless.
Your Honor, we were at summary judgment and discovery was closed. So we were at the summary judgment point, and this was the first time.
Let's talk about how these kinds of things work. I mean, when you have these kinds of retirement plans, you have committees that make decisions, but there's always somebody in the company who then is charged with implementing that, administering the decisions of that kind of committee, right?
Your Honor, we don't know because we don't have a record of it here. There's no record that they made a decision.
That's why it seems to me, why not take her deposition?
How many people were on DuPont's witness list? Do you remember? Just roughly.
It was 10 to 12, Your Honor, on their initial Rule 26 disclosures, and they all had then the identical description of what they knew. None of them referenced a compensation committee. Then as we got into discovery and they gave interrogatories that didn't mention a compensation committee and they gave testimony from their benefits manager, Ms. Hutchison, they didn't reference a compensation committee. It was only at summary judgment in Dineen's declaration was the first time there's any reference.
What is it, Rule 56F? I think that's it. That's the whole point of it. You say stop, we can't continue without discovery on this point.
So, Your Honor, that's right. That's what Rule 56F says. But again, because what this court requires in its Jefferson decision from last year is that to have personal knowledge, and the Jefferson decision involved an HR representative, to have personal knowledge, you have to have participated in the decision.
Okay, that's not a surprise point. That's a different point. You had two themes going here. I'm telling you, the surprise one doesn't quite work, because that's what Rule 56 is designed for, right? This just takes you back to what she said in her deposition was useless from the beginning, whether we'd gotten it at the very beginning of the case or the day before the oral argument in the 11th Circuit. That's your theory.
That's right. Her testimony is not admissible under this court's decision in Jefferson. And further, her testimony is contradicted by other DuPont testimony in the record from Ms. Hutchison and from their own affidavit. None of that was credited, and frankly, her declaration was improperly weighed by the district court.
So we felt there was a clear issue of fact there.
Both sides moved for summary judgment in this
case. Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
Okay.
The point we wanted to make, too, is that there is ambiguity in the pension plan. To the extent there is ambiguity in how retirement is used, that would create an issue of fact for a jury to decide if the court applies the rules
unusual
of construction.
Unusual argument to be making for someone who also moved for summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. We also argued that the plan does have some ambiguity. And if the court applies the rules of construction as required to an end, that ambiguity remains. When looking at the whole plan, then this court is authorized to remand for a jury trial.
Thank you, Mr. Gertrude.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We understand your case.
We'll be in recess until tomorrow. All rise.